Welcome to the Anesthesiology Journal podcast, an audio interview of study authors and editorialists.
Hello, I'm Bobby Jean Schweitzer, professor of anesthesiology at Northwestern University and an associate editor for Anesthesiology. And you are listening to an anesthesiology podcast designed for physicians and scientists interested in the research that appears in our journal. Today, we are speaking with the author of a publication that appears in the December 2018 issue of the journal. With us is Dr. Naveed Siddiqui. Dr. Siddiqui is the senior author of an article titled, Ultrasound is Superior to Palpation in Identifying the Cricothyroid Membrane in Subjects with Poorly Defined Neck Landmarks, a Randomized Clinical Trial. He is an associate professor in the Department of Anesthesia and Acute Pain Service at Mount Sinai Hospital and the University of Toronto in Toronto, Ontario, Canada. Welcome, Dr. Siddiqui.
Thank you, Dr. Switzer. It's an honor to be here with you on this platform.
So maybe we should start out with you just giving us a little bit of a background or understanding as to what you intended to do with this study. What kind of questions were you aiming to answer?
Okay, so this is a series of studies that we have been conducted here at Mount Sinai Hospital. And the background for it is when we encounter difficult airway, most of our difficult airway algorithm lead us to perform the surgical airway. And how do we perform the surgical airway is basically by identifying the neck landmarks, such as the prominent thyroid cartilage, and then the cricoid cartilage, and in between is the cricothyroid membrane. These landmarks are not easily palpable. There are many studies which have shown that this leads to failure of the procedure. So that was the rationale to perform this study. We hypothesized that ultrasound is more accurate than external palpation in identifying the cricothyroid membrane when compared to this stepped standard, that is the CAT scan. The objective of this randomized controlled trial was to compare the accuracy of ultrasound versus external palpation in localizing the cricothyroid membrane in patients who had poorly defined neck landmarks.
So a very important question. You did the study, you said, in patients with poorly defined neck landmarks. But before we get to that, what do we know about the use of ultrasound in patients with normal neck anatomy?
This is another study on the topic by our group. This is the first one looking at the accuracy of ultrasound in patients with ill-defined neck landmarks, perhaps the same characteristics which make them candidate for difficult intubation. At present, there are a number of studies examining the utility of ultrasonography for airway exams and specifically at the identification of the cricothyroid membrane. The accuracy rate of palpation technique to identify the cricothyroid membrane is between 30 to 70%, and this is in patients without any neck pathology. And the accuracy rate of ultrasound in patients who don't have any neck pathology is up to 100%.
Say that again. So you were accurate only one-third to two-thirds of the time when we have normal necks by palpation, but ultrasound virtually 100% of the time.
That's correct.
Okay. Good. So that sets the stage for, I guess, that we would expect that, you know, more difficult patients or with difficult anatomy may be both more difficult, I guess, for a palpation as well as potentially more difficult for ultrasound. So I guess you're going to tell us a little bit more about that. But before we get to that question, what were the typical neck pathologies that these patients had in your study population?
So we recruited patients who were coming for their CAT scans at a major cancer care hospital in Canada. These patients were mostly ENT surgery patients. Typical neck pathologies were different kind of thyroid tumors and other head and neck tumors. This does include patients who had previous neck surgeries, who had radiation to their neck, or have had some neck masses.
Okay. So not necessarily just a patient who was obese or had a thick neck, but actually had some sort of pathologic or surgical pathology.
That's right.
Okay. So who actually determined if the patients were the right ones for this study, or how did you recruit patients? And I guess even among that group now, you know, people can have surgery or masses, but they don't interfere with the airway particularly or the anterior part of the neck. So what were the criteria for poorly defined neck landmarks?
Okay, so the neck anatomy of each patient was assessed by an independent anesthesiologist for the degree of difficulty in identifying the neck landmarks according to an established grading system, which has been used in different studies. So the grading system is defined as grade easy are the ones in which you could visually see the neck landmarks, such as prominent thyroid cartilage. Grade moderate was defined as somebody who requires light palpation of the neck to identify the landmarks. Grade difficult are those individuals in which there is a deep palpation required to identify the neck landmarks. And grade impossible was given to those patients in which you are not able to palpate either the thyroid or the cricoid cartilage. In this particular study, we enrolled patients who had a score of moderate, difficult, and impossible neck landmark identification.
Got it. So an independent anesthesiologist who was not later part of the ultrasound or palpation group was the one who graded these patients initially.
That's right.
Okay. And now who actually performed the ultrasound examinations? And did the same providers also, were they palpating, or you had two separate groups, one doing ultrasound and one doing palpation? And were they on the same patients or in different patients? So give us some more details about that.
Yeah, so the identification of the cricothyroid membrane using either the external palpation or the ultrasound was performed by two anesthesia fellow, and this was dependent on their schedule and availability. So these two individuals did either the ultrasound or the external palpation, depending on patient randomization. On the day of the CAT scan, this anesthesia fellow either used the palpation method or the ultrasound method to mark the anticipated entry point using a radiopaque CT-compatible sticker and mark that point. These patients were supine with the neck in the same neutral position as they would maintain for their CT scan.
So was that considered the gold standard for location of the cricothyroid membrane, the CT scan result?
Traditionally, it was the landmark technique that was considered to be the gold standard. Recently, last few years, there have been quite few studies which have used ultrasonography to identify the cricothyroid membrane. However, none of the studies have compared ultrasound to a radiograph or a CT scan to validate the ultrasound imaging. And this is what we did in this study.
Mm-hmm. So you were seeing how closely they matched up to what the picture showed.
That's right.
On the CT.
On the CT scan.
Right, right. So did you use volunteers for this, or were these patients that were going to be having a computed tomography scan independent of your study?
As I mentioned earlier, we went to a major cancer care hospital, which is not our hospital, but we are, you know, like located side by side. It's a major referral center for ENT surgery. And these were the patients who were coming here for a follow-up after their surgery or initial assessment of their neck pathology. They were in hospitals primarily for their CAT scans appointment.
I see. Okay. And so what training did the two anesthesiology fellows have before they participated in this study?
So the anesthesia fellows who were involved in this study received a 10-minute didactic lecture on the anatomy, followed by a 3-minute video presentation on the ultrasonographic and palpation techniques to identify the anatomical landmarks and the cricothyroid membrane. They were then given hands-on training at least 5 times with the ultrasound. And as I mentioned, we've been conducting study on this subject for quite some time. So both these fellows had performed a minimum of 20 successful identification of the cricothyroid membrane using the external palpation and ultrasound, which is the required number to achieve competence in ultrasound identification of the cricothyroid membrane.
Hmm. So we know that for a fact, that it requires on average 20 examinations.
Actually, our group published a study on this.
Excellent. If one wanted to read more, where was that published?
This was published in an open access journal in BMC Anesthesiology.
Okay. So I think you mentioned this in the, at the very beginning, but since we've kind of talked some about some other things, can you go back and review the anatomy for us? Like, where is the cricothyroid membrane? If you were trying to describe to somebody who didn't know anything about the neck, how would they go about palpating, or where would they be putting their ultrasound probe?
Sure. So as we know, the most prominent neck landmark, especially in the males, is the thyroid cartilage. Below the thyroid cartilage is the cricoid cartilage. It is a ring of cartilage that surrounds the trachea. The cricoid cartilage is located slightly below the thyroid, which it connects with through the medial cricothyroid ligament. It also joins the first tracheal ring through the cricotracheal ligaments. These cricoid ligaments are basically cricothyroid membrane.
Understood.
It is also the space between the inferior border of the thyroid cartilage and the superior border of the cricoid cartilage.
And what are we talking about as far as dimensions here?
The cricothyroid membrane, and this is through studies done on human cadavers, have a mean width of 8.2 millimeters with an upper limit of 11 millimeters and a mean height of 10 millimeter with an upper limit of 13 millimeter. So these dimensions were done on the cadaver, and these fit in a normal person with regular height.
So about a centimeter by centimeter, plus or minus a millimeter or two.
All is in millimeters, yeah.
Right. So is there an optimal way to palpate the neck to identify the cricothyroid membrane? Like, does one start midline? Do you start at the thyroid and move down? Or how would you tell somebody or teach someone?
So not much has been described about the optimum way of identifying the cricothyroid membrane. Different methods have been described to locate the cricothyroid membrane, such as by palpating the trachea just above the sternal notch and proceed upward until the prominence of the cricothyroid cartilage is identified, or by palpating the thyroid notch and proceeding downward until the prominence of the thyroid cartilage is identified. In this study, we identified the cricothyroid membrane using the index and middle finger of the non-dominant hand to palpate the thyroid cartilage in the midline, starting from the cephal head and moving caudally to the cricothyroid cartilage.
And use the non-dominant hand because you assume that if someone's actually going to be doing a cricothyrotomy, they would be holding the instrument in their right hand and palpating with their left hand? Or vice versa,
that's
they
right.
Could be holding their dominant hand and palpating with their non-dominant hand.
That's right.
Right. So how does one perform an ultrasound examination to locate this membrane?
Two techniques have been described for systematic stepwise identification of the cricothyroid membrane. One in which you hold the ultrasound probe in a longitudinal direction, also known as the strings of pearl technique. And the other one is where you hold the ultrasound probe in a transverse orientation and you identify the thyroid cartilage, then you see the air line, and then you see the cricoid cartilage. This technique is also called TAKA technique. This has been described by a group from Denmark, and this has been well published in literature. The string of pearls technique is the most well published and has proven its superiority over the transverse technique. For patients with a very short neck or flexion deformity of the neck that leaves no space to palpate the ultrasound transducer in the longitudinal position, it is recommended the transverse or the TAKA technique to identify cricothyroid membrane, as in these subsets of patients, this may be the only successful technique. You can achieve a 100% success rate of identifying the cricothyroid membrane when you combine both the longitudinal and the transverse technique. And, you know, like the listeners would be able to understand it better if they look at the figures. And we have published this stepwise approach with color pictures in the April edition of this year's Canadian Journal of Anesthesia.
So there's not actually pictures in this article that we're discussing right now, but they can go back to an earlier article where you described the technique?
Exactly.
Okay. And your name is on that previous article if they wanted to Google that?
Yes. Yes.
Great.
It's an April edition of Canadian Journal of Anesthesia.
Perfect. Thank you for mentioning that. So does one use a typical ultrasound probe that like we would be used to using for a central line placement or a peripheral nerve block, or is there a special probe that you have to use?
Yes, it is the same ultrasound probe that is used for central venous cannulation or for, you know, like brachial plexus block. It is used to visualize superficial structures. This is a high-frequency linear probe with 5 to 10 hertz.
Tell us what you found.
So we randomized 223 patients, 101 to the external palpation group, and 114 in the ultrasound group. More than half of the patients in each group had previous neck surgeries. The patient characteristics were similar between the two groups, except for a small difference in the BMI. Our primary outcome was the accuracy in identification of the cricothyroid membrane, which was measured by digital ruler in millimeters from the center point of the cricothyroid membrane identified at the CT scan. So we measured the distance between the middle of the cricothyroid membrane identified through the CT scan to the distance where the point was marked using external palpation and to the point where ultrasound determined that this is the center point of the cricothyroid membrane. We defined success as the proportion of accurate attempts within 5 millimeter distance from the center of the CT point to the ultrasound point or the external palpation point. So the percentage of accurate attempts defined as a distance of 5 millimeter or less was tenfold greater in the ultrasound group. That is 81% versus in the external palpation group, it was only 8%, and this was statistically significant. The other important finding was the distance that was measured from the external palpation to the CT scan point was 5 times greater as compared to the ultrasound point. And the risk ratio of inaccurate localization of the cricothyroid membrane was 9-fold greater with the external palpation than with the ultrasonography. And this was statistically significant as well.
You mentioned how it's statistically significant, and I assume you chose the 5 millimeter because that suggests perhaps if one is off that much, it's a problem. But was the accuracy of the measurement by ultrasound clinically significant? And I guess what I'm asking is, you know, would ultrasound actually make a difference? I know you didn't study the actual performance of cricothyrotomies in these patients, but could you postulate or predict that this difference in ultrasound would have been the difference between success or failure?
That's right. Not in this study, we did the performance, but in our previous study that was published in 2015 in Anesthesiology, and this was a cadaver study, we actually performed the procedure. The two groups there were ultrasound guided versus external palpation. And we showed that there was a significantly high incidence of injury to the larynx and trachea using the palpation technique as compared to the ultrasonography. And there was a relative risk reduction of almost 3% between the two techniques. The use of ultrasound increased the probability of correct insertion by 5.6 times in cadavers with difficult and impossible landmark palpation. And, you know, like to put it into the context, there are some new published reports in which ultrasonography was used to identify and mark the cricothyroid membrane before the start of anesthesia, and then they used the same point and successfully did the cricothyrotomy without complications.
Mm-hmm. Did you measure the time it took to do an ultrasound identification?
No, not in this study. However, in previous studies, we have measured the time duration to mark the cricothyroid membrane using ultrasound and palpation. And as expected, it takes longer to perform the ultrasound. However, practice of ultrasound scanning not only reduces the time, but also improves your ability to identify difficult neck landmarks. Mm. This was the case in another study from our group, which coincidentally was published in the same December issue of Anesthesia and Analgesia. We tested the ability of anesthesia participants to identify the midpoint of the cricothyroid membrane using the external palpation with and without ultrasound-guided practice. Anesthesia participants exposed to practice with ultrasound-guided palpation of cricothyroid membrane location were better able to identify the cricothyroid membrane using only blind palpation than participants without ultrasound-guided practice. Practice with ultrasound-guided palpation of neck landmark improves subsequent blind localization of the cricothyroid membrane using palpation alone. So this just came out in a December issue of Anesthesia and Analgesia.
Yes, I read that. I thought it was a very fascinating finding, particularly given, you know, sort of the discussions around whether ultrasound use is causing people to lose their other skills. And I think this is often brought up in relationship to central line placements or peripheral nerve blocks, is if you get reliant on ultrasound, will it prevent you from doing these procedures when you don't have an ultrasound? And you guys showed that it actually helped. Right? That was the
It actually
of that
helped
study.
In your clinical
right.
or palpatory technique.
Right, right, right. So, Neil, you've spread the wealth around, I must say. I think you've hit pretty much every major academic journal in anesthesia to publish one of your papers in. Getting back to this study, did any specific pathology or specific kind of neck anatomy, such as a type of previous surgery, or perhaps even a goiter or obesity, negatively impact the ultrasound exam? Did something make it more difficult, or was it equally successful?
Well, this was the reason, one of the reasons to perform this particular study, to identify the predictors of difficult sonography. We did not find any of these factors to be negatively affecting the quality of ultrasound exam. In fact, sometimes it is difficult to get a good quality ultrasound image when you have a prominent thyroid cartilage, and this is secondary to inadequate contact of the ultrasound transducer with the skin. So high BMI, increased neck circumference, these are predictive of difficult landmark palpation. But with ultrasound, these are not the predictors for a difficult ultrasound exam.
You said that a prominent thyroid cartilage made it more difficult for ultrasound.
That's right.
So that's interesting, because I would think that that would make it easier for palpation. Did it?
It would definitely make it easier for palpation, but to place the ultrasound probe right on top of the cartilage, sometimes the contact, you have to put a lot of ultrasound gel in order to get a good image and to have an adequate contact for the image to be generated.
Sure. But that's probably a good thing, right? That the one thing that maybe makes it easier to palpate is the only thing that seems to make it harder to do your ultrasound. So maybe a combination of ultrasound and palpation may be the ideal situation.
For sure. Yeah.
Did you find a sex difference in what your findings were with either the ultrasound or palpation?
In this current study, male participation was more than 60% in both the groups, so sex distribution was pretty much the same. There was 40% females, and they both were equally distributed.
But I mean, as far as like the difficulty, because as we were talking about the thyroid, you know, men typically have a more prominent thyroid. Did you find that there was a difference in your ability to either accurately palpate or accurately do ultrasound in the two different sexes?
It could have been if our criteria was not to select difficult palpation patients. Again, I would refer to a previous study that we performed on non-pregnant and pregnant female patients in our institute. We found that patients who were pregnant, the palpation technique was very difficult as compared to the ultrasonography. And perhaps the neck circumference increases, it seems to be obvious that it is difficult to identify where the dead center of the cricothyroid membrane would be because you're not sure whether you're palpating the thyroid cartilage or the cricoid cartilage.
Mm-hmm. Sounds like you've studied a variety of patients in a variety of situations.
Well, we are a high-risk obstetric unit. Obstetrics is our main population.
Right. And that's an important population because those patients, notoriously, we know may be difficult to intubate, difficult to ventilate, and often
indeed,
in the situations you need to do that, there's a real urgency to it as well.
That's right.
So is it realistic that in a situation of cannot intubate, cannot oxygenate, that one can effectively, efficiently perform ultrasound to assist with emergency cricothyroidotomy?
This is the point. Cricothyroidotomy is done in an emergency situation as per all airway algorithms. However, in patients with anticipated difficult airways, the algorithm pay emphasis on better preparedness. That includes preparedness for the surgical airway. So we are advocating that you should pre-mark the cricothyroid membrane using ultrasound before induction of anesthesia, irrespective of whatever method of intubation you choose.
That would make sense.
It has to be done
right.
Not at the time when mm-hmm. your patient is desaturating. It should be mm-hmm. done as a preparatory step.
Mm-hmm. Yes, just like you make sure you have the other, you know, plan B, plan C, and you have your fiber optic available, and you just do this as
exactly.
part of that setup. So I think you mentioned a little bit about, you know, the injury risk of cricothyroidotomy. So it's not just failure to establish an airway, but also in doing so, do you actually cause other kinds of injuries? Were you able to look at that in this study or other studies that you, of the likelihood that using ultrasound would also make this a safer procedure via decreasing complications such as vascular injuries or injury of the vocal cords?
Yes, definitely. And this is exactly what we find out in our previous study done on human cadavers. The injuries associated with larynx and trachea and even esophageal perforation were absent in the group that used ultrasound for identification of the cricothyroid membrane. Or in that particular study, it was a performance of the cricothyroidotomy. So ultrasound reduced the incidence of injuries to the larynx and trachea.
I assume that trauma surgeons, ENT surgeons, even emergency room department physicians probably perform more cricothyroidotomies than anesthesiologists do. Do we know anything about ultrasound use by those groups of people and the success or benefits of it?
Yes. In fact, there is a publication on this subject, and unfortunately, neither anesthesiologist nor the trauma surgeons were good in identifying the cricothyroid membrane. The overall success rate using palpation to identify the cricothyroid membrane in that publication was less than 50%, and there were no differences in success rate between anesthesia providers and trauma surgeons.
Interesting.
It was 16% success by anesthesia providers and 26% success by the trauma surgeons.
Wow. Not very good. So should we be training anesthesiology residents or even attendings to routinely perform neck ultrasound?
Absolutely. We at our institute have already started to train residents and fellows how to use ultrasound for various indications. And it seems like learning ultrasonography is going to be one of the most important skills for anesthesia trainees now and in the future.
It does seem to be revolutionizing our practice. So what exactly is the curriculum for the neck ultrasound specifically that your residents get exposed to?
So first of all, they get a revision tutorial, a didactic teaching about the anatomy of the upper airway, specifically related to the performance of surgical airway, both cricothyroidotomy and tracheostomies. And then they get a hands-on session to learn the technique, how to identify the exact space cricothyroid membrane using both the transverse and the longitudinal methods of upper airway ultrasonography.
And you do this in a simulated setting or with cadavers, or you do it like in anesthetized patients?
we do it on volunteers. And if they are part of a study, then yes, they would go into the simulation center, but not as a routine.
Sounds very valuable. So I hope today's discussion will interest many of our listeners and lead you to read this important article to learn more. Thank you, Dr. Siddiqui, for discussing your work with us today. I wish you well as you continue your efforts to enhance the practice of anesthesiology and strive to improve the care of our patients.
Thank you very much for giving me the opportunity.
You've been listening to the Anesthesiology Journal Podcast, the official peer-reviewed journal of the American Society of Anesthesiologists. Check anesthesiology.org for an archive of this podcast and other related content.